This is Anglia Examinations, England. Listening Examination. Level 2. Paper EE Proficiency 116. Instructions. Listen to the recording and answer the questions. You will hear each part of the recording twice. There will be a pause before each part so you can read the questions. There will be other pauses to let you think about your answers. When you hear the tone, you should write your answers on the question paper. Write clearly in the spaces provided. You must ask any questions now as you cannot speak during the test. Listen to the first part of the test.
Section L1. You will hear a guide speaking to visitors at the Roman Museum of Cumbria. For questions 1 to 5, listen to the recording and tick the correct box. For questions 6 to 10, fill in the missing information.
Welcome, everybody. My name's Dan, and I'm one of the guides here at the Roman Heritage Museum of Cumbria. As you've probably noticed, it's pouring down, so what I'm going to do is give my short talk in here. Then we'll go out and have a look at the site. As long as it hasn't been washed away, that is. With any luck, we'll make it between showers. Right, this is the Roman Museum of Cumbria. There was an old museum of Roman artefacts, but that closed in 1986. The public first started coming here in 2002, and the beautiful glass extension was added in late 2007. We don't see the need for too much writing. People really just want to have a look round the exhibits, pick them up, and really have a close look. That's what we offer, and that's what our visitors enjoy. It's so much more engaging than watching a video. They can do that at home. We are now standing on the site of the Mile Castle of Sleesborough. These mile castles were guard posts and places where it was possible to cross the enormous Roman wall. Sleesborough is one of 76 mile castles built around 78 AD. Some remains of 58 of them can still be seen today. This wall marked the northern border of the empire and was heavily fortified. It stood 15 feet high, although with a parapet, this would have been up to 20, with forts every 7 miles along its length, and deep ditches either side. It was finally abandoned in 420 AD. Now, if we step outside, we can see the trenches, the remains of the central heating system that was built here. It was extremely complex and efficient. Over there are some really huge stones. Those are the remains of the main gateway through the wall. That's it, those stones over there. Chariots, wagons, soldiers, they all came through here. Please keep to the marked path. Now then, in the museum itself is an inscription from the gateway dating from 198 AD. It was made by a Roman mason who repaired the gateway after it was partly destroyed by the enemy from Scotland. The inscription is excellently crafted and was only dug up in 2010. There's a marvellous new book all about it in the gift shop. It doesn't close until 5:45, which gives you plenty of time to look around the museum as well as the shop, as there's lots to see. Now, this is the best part, I think, and it's quite...
Now listen to the first part of the test again.
Welcome, everybody. My name's Dan, and I'm one of the guides here at the Roman Heritage Museum of Cumbria. As you've probably noticed, it's pouring down, so what I'm going to do is give my short talk in here. Then we'll go out and have a look at the site. As long as it hasn't been washed away, that is. With any luck, we'll make it between showers. Right, this is the Roman Museum of Cumbria. There was an old museum of Roman artefacts, but that closed in 1986. The public first started coming here in 2002, and the beautiful glass extension was added in late 2007. We don't see the need for too much writing. People really just want to have a look round the exhibits, pick them up, and really have a close look. That's what we offer, and that's what our visitors enjoy. It's so much more engaging than watching a video. They can do that at home. We are now standing on the site of the Mile Castle of Sleesborough. These mile castles were guard posts and places where it was possible to cross the enormous Roman wall. Sleesborough is one of 76 mile castles built around 78 AD. Some remains of 58 of them can still be seen today. This wall marked the northern border of the empire and was heavily fortified. It stood 15 feet high, although with a parapet, this would have been up to 20, with forts every 7 miles along its length, and deep ditches either side. It was finally abandoned in 420 AD. Now, if we step outside, we can see the trenches, the remains of the central heating system that was built here. It was extremely complex and efficient. Over there are some really huge stones. Those are the remains of the main gateway through the wall. That's it, those stones over there. Chariots, wagons, soldiers, they all came through here. Please keep to the marked path. Now then, in the museum itself is an inscription from the gateway dating from 198 AD. It was made by a Roman mason who repaired the gateway after it was partly destroyed by the enemy from Scotland. The inscription is excellently crafted and was only dug up in 2010. There's a marvellous new book all about it in the gift shop. It doesn't close until 5:45, which gives you plenty of time to look around the museum as well as the shop, as there's lots to see. Now, this is the best part, I think, and it's quite...
Now listen to the second part of the test.
Section L2. You are going to hear 5 speakers talking about activities they have recently taken up. For questions 1 to 10, choose the correct answer, A, B or C. Speaker 1.
My friend's a big fan of yoga as a way of building strength and flexibility. She's always tried to persuade me to go, but I resisted for years. There are plenty of studios around here, but there was so much information to take in about all the different practices. It was quite overwhelming. They cater for all budgets, though, so I finally signed up and started Hatha yoga classes. Hatha is about relaxation. It focuses on learning the breath that you need for every form of yoga and introduces all the basic poses. Many people decide that it's too slow and meditative for them, but that didn't worry me. There's some discussion that Hatha yoga is beneficial to people with high blood pressure, heart disease, and depression. There's no firm proof of that, though, but I'm certainly enjoying it.
Speaker 2.
I'm really keen on working as a freelance writer, but it's hard to get noticed. My brother suggested I start an online blog as a way of getting my writing out there. I'm not a political blogger, I just wanted an outlet for my writing. Blogging's all about sharing your thoughts and inviting others to comment. If you're lucky, the right person will see it. It must work because I've just had my first offer. Anyway, with blogging, the best advice is to choose something that you're passionate about and then narrow your focus. For example, if you have a passion for food, start a dessert blog or a blog where all your recipes are made with 5 ingredients. The goal is to pick a topic that's broad enough that you can write regularly, but narrow enough that you can make it yours. Oh, and regular doesn't mean daily, as it can quickly take over your life.
Speaker 3.
When a friend first recommended I take up knitting, I thought of my grandmother happily knitting her way through long winter afternoons. Memories that didn't reflect the ambitious image I had of myself. I initially felt quite hurt that she saw me in that way. I'd never considered it because it has a rather boring reputation among my age group. But I quickly came to realise that knitting has remained popular over the years for a reason. Concentrating on every stitch can bring real peace. I love not having to think about anything other than following the pattern. I sometimes manage to make pocket money from selling at craft shows. I get my real reward from volunteering to teach those who've never had the chance to learn. I never thought it could bring such pleasure.
Speaker 4. If you intend to take walking seriously, loose-fitting, comfortable clothes are desirable. Some people need a flow of upbeat music to keep moving. Personally, I'd rather listen to the birds. Your absolute priority, though, is a decent pair of shoes. There are lots of other gadgets out there, like pedometers, so you can measure how many steps you've walked. I think it's more important to get decent footwear. Get the best quality you can. I'm lucky enough to live near a beach, and as I have knee problems, I find walking on sand much gentler on my knees compared to the hard pavement. Walking on sand makes you work harder, though. Your feet sink a little, so you spend more energy than when city walking. Admittedly, there's often more to see in the city. The beach is always the same, but with my knees, I don't have much choice. Speaker 5.
I'd never considered ten-pin bowling a serious hobby, but my cousin told me it gives you a great body workout and is very sociable. Now, I'm fairly fit already and have a wide circle of friends, so I wasn't convinced until I went to a local tournament. Then I discovered just how competitive bowling games are, which really appealed to my desire to win. Bowlers can be all shapes and sizes. Some use a ball that weighs up to 16 pounds, though you need to choose a weight that suits you. You must be careful not to injure your wrist or back. Always use both hands and bend at the knees. Oh, and there's a bit of a complicated scoring system. Adding up in my head isn't my strong point, but I'm certainly getting better.
Now listen to the second part of the test again. Speaker 1.
My friend's a big fan of yoga as a way of building strength and flexibility. She's always tried to persuade me to go, but I resisted for years. There are plenty of studios around here, but there was so much information to take in about all the different practices. It was quite overwhelming. They cater for all budgets, though, so I finally signed up and started Hatha yoga classes. Hatha is about relaxation. It focuses on learning the breath that you need for every form of yoga and introduces all the basic poses. Many people decide that it's too slow and meditative for them, but that didn't worry me. There's some discussion that Hatha yoga is beneficial to people with high blood pressure, heart disease, and depression. There's no firm proof of that, though, but I'm certainly enjoying it.
Speaker 2.
I'm really keen on working as a freelance writer, but it's hard to get noticed. My brother suggested I start an online blog as a way of getting my writing out there. I'm not a political blogger. I just wanted an outlet for my writing. Blogging's all about sharing your thoughts and inviting others to comment. If you're lucky, the right person will see it. It must work because I've just had my first offer. Anyway, with blogging, the best advice is to choose something that you're passionate about and then narrow your focus. For example, if you have a passion for food, start a dessert blog or a blog where all your recipes are made with 5 ingredients. The goal is to pick a topic that's broad enough that you can write regularly, but narrow enough that you can make it yours. Regular doesn't mean daily, as it can quickly take over your life.
Speaker 3.
When a friend first recommended I take up knitting, I thought of my grandmother happily knitting her way through long winter afternoons. Memories that didn't reflect the ambitious image I had of myself. I initially felt quite hurt that she saw me in that way. I'd never considered it because it has a rather boring reputation among my age group. But I quickly came to realise that knitting has remained popular over the years for a reason. Concentrating on every stitch can bring real peace. I love not having to think about anything other than following the pattern. I sometimes manage to make pocket money from selling at craft shows. I get my real reward from volunteering to teach those who've never had the chance to learn. I never thought it could bring such pleasure.
Speaker 4. If you intend to take walking seriously, loose-fitting, comfortable clothes are desirable. Some people need a flow of upbeat music to keep moving. Personally, I'd rather listen to the birds. Your absolute priority, though, is a decent pair of shoes. There are lots of other gadgets out there, like pedometers, so you can measure how many steps you've walked. I think it's more important to get decent footwear. Get the best quality you can. I'm lucky enough to live near a beach, and as I have knee problems, I find walking on sand much gentler on my knees compared to the hard pavement. Walking on sand makes you work harder, though. Your feet sink a little, so you spend more energy than when city walking. Admittedly, there's often more to see in the city. The beach is always the same, but with my knees, I don't have much choice. Speaker 5.
I'd never considered tenpin bowling a serious hobby, but my cousin told me it gives you a great body workout and is very sociable. Now, I'm fairly fit already and have a wide circle of friends, so I wasn't convinced until I went to a local tournament. Then I discovered just how competitive bowling games are, which really appealed to my desire to win. Bowlers can be all shapes and sizes. Some use a ball that weighs up to 16 pounds, though you need to choose a weight that suits you. You must be careful not to injure your wrist or back. Always use both hands and bend at the knees. Oh, and there's a bit of a complicated scoring system. Adding up in my head isn't my strong point, but I'm certainly getting better.
Now listen to the third part of the test. Section L3. You are going to listen to part of an interview with Fikret Hajivunits, who works as a translator at the European Parliament in Brussels.
Hello, Hello. Our guest today is Fikret Hadjivunits, who's a translator at the European Parliament. Fikret, how many languages do you speak?
Hello, Fiona. People are always asking me this question, and I find it very hard to answer. I'd love to say I could speak 14 languages, like one of my close colleagues can. Personally, I understand the basics of about 11 or 12, but I only feel really comfortable in speaking 7 of them. Those are the ones I work in Brussels. That is, German, French, English, Spanish, Czech, Polish, and Bulgarian.
You have a satisfactory competency in those.
Yes, I would say so.
You didn't mention Serbo-Croat.
Well, I don't count that. It's my mother tongue. My family left their native country when I was 10. I think it was tougher for them, but you know what kids are like. They just adapt.
So, when and why did you decide to really focus on languages?
Well, when we moved to Germany, none of us in the family spoke a word of German. My dad got a job in a factory and I went to the local school. There were 20 languages spoken there. My best friends were Russian, Arab, all sorts. I naturally picked up a range of words and phrases, which enabled me to get by and make friends. My dad, in contrast, was stuck on a production line and never learned a word or made a friend. It was heartbreaking to see. Languages have since opened up a world of possibilities, but originally it was a way of settling in.
Now, I know you've given up interpreting and you're a translator now. What's the difference?
Well, interpreting is face-to-face oral work, and while it really keeps your brain working, it can be really stressful. But an interpreter can't have an opinion. He or she just has to literally interpret what the speaker is saying. On several occasions, I knew I was repeating awful lies.
Presumably, you prefer your work as a translator. How is that better?
Now I stick to translating written texts. Of course, I often lose my weekends, as it can take up so much time. But I like crafting the text so that I know I'm enabling good communication between people. It's a shame I don't work with people anymore, because translating is something between you and the text. But on the whole, it's better for me because I like what I produce.
Indeed. So what do you think is the most difficult language?
Oh, that's not really a question I can answer, and I'm not even sure there is an answer. When you think of all the hundreds of languages there are in the world...
Now listen to the third part of the test again.
Hello. Our guest today is Fikret Hadjivunits, who's a translator at the European Parliament. Fikret, how many languages do you speak?
Hello, Fiona. People are always asking me this question, and I find it very hard to answer. I'd love to say I could speak 14 languages, like one of my close colleagues can. Personally, I understand the basics of about 11 or 12, but I only feel really comfortable in speaking 7 of them. Those are the ones I work in Brussels. That is, German, French, English, Spanish, Czech, Polish, and Bulgarian.
You have a satisfactory competency in those.
Yes, I would say so.
You didn't mention Serbo-Croat.
Well, I don't count that. It's my mother tongue. My family left their native country when I was 10. I think it was tougher for them, but you know what kids are like. They just adapt.
So, when and why did you decide to really focus on languages?
Well, when we moved to Germany, none of us in the family spoke a word of German. My dad got a job in a factory and I went to the local school. There were 20 languages spoken there. My best friends were Russian, Arab, all sorts. I naturally picked up a range of words and phrases, which enabled me to get by and make friends. My dad, in contrast, was stuck on a production line and never learned a word or made a friend. It was heartbreaking to see. Languages have since opened up a world of possibilities, but originally it was a way of settling in.
Now, I know you've given up interpreting and you're a translator now. What's the difference?
Well, interpreting is face-to-face oral work, and while it really keeps your brain working, it can be really stressful. But an interpreter can't have an opinion. He or she just has to literally interpret what the speaker is saying. On several occasions, I knew I was repeating awful lies.
Presumably, you prefer your work as a translator. How is that better?
Now I stick to translating written texts. Of course, I often lose my weekends, as it can take up so much time. But I like crafting the text so that I know I'm enabling good communication between people. It's a shame I don't work with people anymore, because translating is something between you and the text. But on the whole, it's better for me because I like what I produce.
Indeed. So what do you think is the most difficult language?
Oh, that's not really a question I can answer, and I'm not even sure there is an answer. When you think of all the hundreds of languages there are in the world...
That is the end of the listening test. You will now have 3 minutes to check your answers. Your listening paper will then be collected.